90% of the time, I'm telling the police, take it easy, don't hurt them. Just take it easy, don't hurt them.
You have a leading contender for president telling people in his audience, go ahead and punch someone in the face, I'll pay your legal bills. That's not an excusable attitude, because let me tell you, that is wrong if our kids did it. That is disastrous if a president does.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. It's 5:09. It is Monday, March 14th, 2016, and welcome to another week. Welcome to another Monday. It's a foggy Monday in Chicago. If you're out and about, make sure you allow extra time. We're watching a couple of developing global stories as well. You heard Vic Vaughn mention the oil spill off of Los Angeles. We're going to see how big that is at first light. Also this morning, we're waiting on the U.S. Fed. The Fed meeting is what investors will be talking about this week. Wall Street set for a choppy session today. Stock futures are swinging in and out of losses as we check the WGN Market Desk Global Intel this morning. The numbers have gone wildly from negative to positive this morning as we wait to see what the Federal Reserve will do. Let's check first the futures. The Dow futures off now 13, S&P futures off about 3, and the NASDAQ futures off about 4 points. Overseas, European markets are mainly higher today, but not by much. The FTSE is up just about 20. The DAX is up about 1.5%. And the CAC is up just 0.19% this morning. In Asia, all of the indices are higher as well. The best performing among them appears to be the Shanghai, up about 2% this morning. Not far behind is the Nikkei, which is closed this morning, which is now closed. The Nikkei up at its last level about 1.5%. Also, the Asian Dow this morning up about 1% as well. We'll be watching all of those numbers for you today. As we mentioned on the market calendar today, we're expecting the Federal Reserve to start meeting. Also this week, we're waiting on a couple of other economic reports, likely to see some reports about the economy and industrial production. Also this morning, the news is out about cybersecurity. A new report has ranked all of the nations of the world in terms of their vulnerability to cyber attacks. It is these damaging cyber attacks that has many nations, including the U.S., upping its game in terms of being prepared. Where does Illinois rank? Where does the United States rank in all of this? We're going to bring in our first guest this morning. He is a professor of computer science at the University of Maryland and an expert in big data analytics. V.S. Subramanian is with us this morning. V.S., I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Good morning.
Yes, you did. Close enough, Steve. Good morning.
With a name like Grzanich, I know how bad that is to have somebody not pronounce it right. But we're glad you're with us this morning. By the way, you can follow VS on Twitter at VSSUBRAH. He is, again, from the University of Maryland. So the big question is, how prepared is the United States? Where do we rank on your list?
Well, Steve, this was a bit of a surprise to us. We'd expected the United States to be one of the most vulnerable countries in the world. And to our surprise, we found that the United States was actually either number 10 or number 11 in terms of being the safest from a cyber vulnerability perspective. So that was a surprise.
Why is it a surprise?
Well, we are one of the most aware countries in the world about cybersecurity. You can hardly pick up the paper today without hearing about vulnerabilities, without hearing about some kind of hack or the other perpetrated by either a foreign state, a bunch of criminals, etc. So we see a lot of stories about cyber vulnerability, and we assume, therefore, that we are very heavily attacked, which is true, but whether we're in the worst shape, that's the part that we were surprised by.
Let me make sure that we're on the same page here and that our listeners understand what we're talking about. Are you talking about the federal government as a whole or just all of us as a whole as the United States?
We're talking about all of us as a whole.
Is there one area? I mean, I don't know if I'm still going over some of your research. Is there one area of versus another of those sectors, the private versus the public and the government, that is more vulnerable, or have you gone that deep yet?
We haven't gone that deep at this point. A lot of the data we got was from the security firm Symantec. And they provided us access to about 20 billion reports from machines that they were monitoring around the world. And these reports did not distinguish between government machines versus private machines. And our understanding is the vast majority of them are private machines.
We're going to get into a lot more of this as we continue our discussion after the break. But I'm curious to know if there's one reason over another that we're so safe. Is it just that these companies like Symantec and McAfee are doing a better job?
Well, I think they are doing a good job. Let me start with that. All the vendors in the space are doing a good job. Second, because we have a much better education system than many other countries, most of our citizens are much better educated about cybersecurity than, say, a random person in a relatively poor country. In fact, one of the big findings in our study was that irrespective of which development index you used or which wealth index you used, countries that were rich were generally less vulnerable to cyber attacks. Countries that were poor were much more. There are a couple of exceptions to this, but by and large, those two rules held.
We're talking with V.S. Subramanihan, a professor at the University of Maryland, on the latest report on cybersecurity. We're going to get more into this after our break for traffic here. This is The Opening Bell on WGN, and it's 5:15. Watching the roads, here's Mary Vandeville.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, Friday's rally in U.S. stocks has sparked a Monday morning surge in Asia. The Dow finished its last session at 17,213. The S&P 500 rose 32 points to close at 2,022, and the NASDAQ advanced 86 points on Friday. Nissan is recalling more than 47,000 Leaf electric cars in the U.S. and Canada, citing a possible brake malfunction. Very cold temperatures can cause the relay to fail, requiring more driver effort to operate the brakes. That could increase the risk of a crash. Toyota, meanwhile, says it's working with local Japanese governments to make hydrogen from wind-powered electricity, trying to answer the main criticism of fuel cell cars that making the hydrogen for the fuel is not clean. Right now, most hydrogen is produced from fossil fuels. From Mississippi to British Columbia, North American farmers have struck gold with a new crop in their fields. The retail price of tea is about $700 a pound. The Tea Association of the USA says the market's growing by up to 10% a year. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. This morning we're talking about cybersecurity and where the U.S. ranks in terms of a global threat compared to other countries. There's a new report on this out, and we're talking with the Professor V.S. Subramanian of the University of Maryland, where he is also the director of the Maryland Cybersecurity Center, or the Center for Digital International Government. V.S., I have a question because, you know, as we mentioned, Illinois, the United States is 11th on your list. You got the information from Symantec and their generated reports. This is only, though, when people opted to go into and send these reports, right? Are you concerned that maybe you didn't get enough data? Because I know at the beginning you were sort of questioning these results a little bit, it sounded like.
Oh, no, we're not questioning the results at all, as we did generate them. Obviously, the more data we have, the better off we are. But it's we collected data. The data Symantec collected was from over 4 million machines worldwide. You can't do that kind of data collection without getting opt-in permission from the people involved to see what kinds of threats are posed to their system. And universities in general would not allow faculty to monitor machines without various kinds of opt-in permissions.
Sure.
So that's very critical.
I guess I'm concerned because, you know, sometimes when I this happens to my machine, I don't I guess what I'm getting at is I don't necessarily send that report to Symantec. I have Norton antivirus. And so I'm wondering if there's more people out there that have problems that just don't press that button and send it.
Well, actually, you don't send the reports. My understanding of how this worked, and please note that I did not do this. It was data Symantec collected. My understanding of how this works is when you install one of their antivirus programs, you check a box saying it's okay to send reports in an anonymized fashion, mm-hmm. specifying what's going on in that machine in order to improve the quality of the antivirus software.
Sure. So let's talk about the countries that are not prepared. And do they? Is there a possibility that some of them could impact the United States at some point?
Actually, this is a very interesting point you raised, Steve. Some of the countries that are not well prepared are countries that we would have expected to be much more heavily prepared. These include South Korea, which is one of the world's most advanced economies, certainly one of Asia's biggest economies. Russia and China, both of which are mentioned frequently as the source of cyber attacks. And, you know, what this really suggests to us is that countries can take advantage of the asymmetry between the difficulty of mounting an attack and the difficulty of actually defending themselves. So cost of attacking is relatively cheap, and so countries which rank relatively low in terms of their defenses are actually able to mount pretty good attacks.
And from where we stand here on the Opening Bell, as reporting on global financial markets every morning, you know, every couple of minutes here on the show, this is concerning from that perspective, isn't it? I mean, if you shut down, if somebody's able to get in and shut down a computer system that runs markets in South Korea or one of these other countries, that's going to impact the United States, right?
That's a huge concern because all global financial markets are completely well-linked and connected. So, yes, any attack on a major financial system anywhere in the world will have global repercussions. No question about that.
What is the solution here? Do you offer, you and your colleagues offer any advice on how we can better get these systems secured?
Well, yes. So what we see around the world is that education is a very, very key factor. And we've got to start that education right at the primary school level. So those of us who have kids know that our kids are playing with devices right from the very beginning, from the time they are 2 or 3, or even earlier in some cases. That education of looking at cybersecurity right from the ground up is critical. And we have a few pieces of advice to offer. One, downloading lots of indiscriminate software clearly increases your risk. So in other words, if you download stuff that you don't need, software, you run a risk. Downloading software from publishers who've not signed their software increases your risk. And people have to be aware of the risks posed by what we call misleading software. These are things, for example, that prop up on your screen, promising to install an antivirus program or promising to clean up your memory. And these programs actually are vectors through which an attacker downloads malware onto your machine, in many cases. So education about things like this is very, very important.
And on a, just a very basic level, too, I probably shouldn't respond to this email I got this morning saying I won the Nigerian lottery.
So, you know, phishing,
right.
A phishing attack of this kind is very, very common. It's humans form one of the weakest links in the chain to defend both your computer and your network. And so attackers, for example, will target people. And in fact, companies, executives, senior executives have been targeted with very, very specifically crafted emails focused on them, not a generic, you know, email that may come from a Nigerian scammer.
And we saw a couple of these recently, right, with some of these. There's one in particular. I can't think of the name. A CEO at one of these major companies did this recently, didn't he?
That's correct. I believe I heard a recent episode where I think it was a message purporting to come from the CEO, but in fact, where that was not the case, to one of the senior executives in the company asking for a lot of personal information about people. So, yes, I mean, people have to be able to look at an email and quickly figure out, is this a phishing request or not? And, of course, you know, if you get an email of this kind and you know the person who's sending it, you can ask by phone or by some other way mm-hmm. before responding to the request. And if you do not know the person, then you ought to be triply careful.
Very interesting data information. We're going to link this out throughout the morning to our listeners here in the Opening Bell. But V.S. Subramanian, it's very good of you to be with us today, the director of the Center for Digital International Government at the University of Maryland in College Park, Maryland. Thanks for getting up this morning. Thanks for sharing this information.
Thank you, Steve. It is a pleasure.
Have a great day.
You too, Bubba.
It's 527. This is the opening bell to the WGN newsroom. Now, Vic Vaughn standing by. Vic.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. We have some new information on this Amtrak derailment. This was a train headed for Chicago from L.A. There are injuries, so we'll give our listeners the latest. Also update listeners where the injured have been taken in the event that any of the injured have family members here in Chicago. All that coming up.
All right. Thanks, Vic. Vic Vaughn with the news coming up shortly. It's 528.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, a much faster data connection for your smartphone. It's been about 6 years now since wireless data networks were upgraded from 3G to the faster 4G LTE connections. But Devendra Hardawar with the tech blog Engadget says ultra-fast 5G service got a lot of attention at this year's big mobile convention in Barcelona.
We're finally seeing companies starting to talk about 5G in very realistic terms, and that's something we haven't seen so far.
5G networks could offer speeds of up to 10 to 20 times faster than 4G. But that's not the only benefit.
The latency between data signals will be very, very low, almost instantaneous. And that's really useful for things like Internet of Things devices, connected cars.
As for the timing, Hardawar says 5G is still a ways off.
Right now, it's just a concept. It's not really a certified standard yet. We won't have any final details until like 2018. And carriers probably won't be deploying anything until like around 2020.
With Tech Trends, I'm Joan Bennett, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 538. Welcome back. It's right. I said 538, not 438. Hopefully you've set your clocks ahead 1 hour this morning. It's the big South by Southwest conference going on this week in Austin. And Chicago has a pretty decent footprint this year. As a matter of fact, several companies are up this year for startups and innovators and accelerator awards. Let's bring in the host of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN, Scott Catoon, who is our connection to this world of unicorns and other fanciful creatures. Good morning, Scott.
How you doing, Steve?
Good. You know, we need to get a ticket to South by Southwest next year. I think you and I absolutely have to be at this thing.
Oh, man, I wanted to go this year, actually, and it just didn't work out for me. But I'm with you next year. You can definitely count on it.
So for those of our listeners who may not be familiar with it, they're either living in caves or not watching the news, this became like a music conference, and it's turned into a whole lot more. It's sort of this place where all things new and innovative with tech and music and you name it happens. And on Friday, President Obama was the keynote speaker, so that tells you how big it is. And he basically told all of the techies and nerds in the audience that the country needs them. He says, I need you in this fight, and that fight is for supremacy in technology and all things innovation. And some Chicago companies are actually making a good footprint there this year, and they're up for startups awards. Tell us about some of these companies.
Yeah, there's more than 30 companies from Chicago, whether it's a startup, or you know, even Motorola and different, you know, some of their smaller subsidiary companies that are present there, which is, you know, that's a lot of companies if you think about it. What I think is really different about this year versus other years in the past is the number of startup companies from Chicago that are massive, that are like impactful, that are the kind of companies that it wouldn't matter if they're from Chicago, New York, Silicon Valley, whatever, they would be making news. You look at companies like Belly, Avant, we've talked about a lot of these companies, Acuba Credit, companies that are either at $1 billion in valuation or rapidly approaching $1 billion in valuation. And what's really cool and interesting is, unlike previous years where you might have, you know, your Groupon and your Cars.com and Career Builder and things that have come out of Chicago, these new ones are really the toast of the town. We have companies that are coming to South by Southwest from Chicago that are literally some of the main attractions, and that's different.
Yeah, and so let me just read for our listeners here a list of some of the things that people are taking part in. Yes, you can be a designer, somebody from Chicago in that. Can incubators make universities relevant again? This is something that we talked about last week on the show. The automated future of sports analysis. I mean, so these are big conferences. These are the key marquee sessions that are being held there. And there are people from Chicago who are running these startups, who are running these shows. I mean, that you have to be proud about that, don't you?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, even, you know, like Tech Nexus, which is down there, it's kind of the other incubator in town next to 1871 as far as size-wise goes. They're represented there as well. We are rapidly becoming thought leaders in a lot of different areas. I mean, to give you an example of just sort of the breadth of knowledge, the spread of things we're doing, we've got media companies from Dose.com, which, you know, we talked about before, is recently invested in $25 million invested in by Tribune Media. We've got, obviously, our group Odds of the World. We've got lots of healthcare companies. We've got numerous credit companies. We've got loyalty program companies like Belly. We've got design companies like Idea. We've got Pritzker Group is there. We've got Onion there. We've got so many different things that are across five or six different industries, and we're going in as leaders or at least thought leaders in a lot of these cases, which, you know, I don't think the people from outside of Chicago necessarily expect from us, but those that are at South by Southwest certainly, I believe, are going to leave with a different perspective.
Let's talk a little bit about the South by Southwest Accelerator. Over the weekend, some companies, there were several companies, Harkin, one of them, which is a new company that is from the folks of Curious City at WBEZ. There was Project 44, Enterprise and Smart Data. ParkNav is this new cool parking application. They were pitching to become part of the South by Southwest Accelerator. What is this accelerator?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple different pieces here, because the accelerator piece, you know, South by Southwest has grown so rapidly just in the last few years. It's changed shape so many different times that I honestly think if you look at the accelerator, it's like we've talked about, right? It's a combination of providing funding, providing access, providing talent, and really all bringing it together in one place and providing a launching pad for companies that everyone views as the best of the best, if you will. The interactive best of the best. We've got the awards. We've got, what is it? I'm skipping on the company from Chicago that's about to win one of these awards. You mentioned it in the intro. But the Accelerator Advisory Board that has been provided by South by Southwest has some of the top innovators really ever in this country. Steve Case, co-founder of AOL, he was just speaking yesterday about this. You basically, by going to this accelerator, have the access to some of the best, most well-known, most well-funded entrepreneurs in the country.
And they're and then you get the opportunity to be on stage and have thousands of people in the audience listening to you.
Oh, yeah. And the access to the capital and the access to you know, once you've won one of the 2016 Accelerator Award, the finalists are literally the who's who of interesting startups in the country right now, and they come from everywhere. I mean, it's not just here in Chicago or from California or from New York. It's other countries as well. You know, you're literally leaving this stage having done something that only 1% of companies of your like will ever be able to experience. And that is something, you know, like Project 44, that's the company I believe that you were mentioned in the launch. That's a company that is from Chicago, that is a SaaS platform that traditionally, I don't think people think of what's your next great SaaS company coming from. Definitely not Chicago. You're thinking Silicon Valley in most cases. So now all of a sudden, Chicago's on the forefront and on the same stage, so to speak, as your San Francisco's. You know, there's three San Francisco-based companies who are up for this award. There's a German company. There's a New York company. There's, you know, Austin, Texas-based company. You know, we're now on the same exact stage as them. It's a very limited, small stage, but we are on it.
Scott Catoon, host of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Plus, and our access to the folks at 1871 and the startups, the innovators. Good of you to be with us in the opening bell. This is something we're going to be following throughout the week. And again, I will work hard to get us tickets to this thing next year.
That would be amazing.
All right. Scott, thanks very much. It's 5:45. This is the opening bell on WGN.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50 on the opening bell. Dow futures look to be lower this morning. The opening bell coming later could be lower, although we've watched these futures go back and forth throughout the morning. Again, they are lower now. The NASDAQ and S&P futures lower as well. And we have some breaking news into the market desk this morning. It's just been announced that Starwood Hotels and Resorts has received a non-binding proposal from a consortium of companies to acquire all of the outstanding shares of common stock of Starwood. So this means Starwood is being taken over. We will continue to monitor this. We'll find out exactly what this means for the hotel industry. Other shares are trading higher this morning. Again, Starwood Hotels and Resorts announcing an unsolicited acquisition proposal. And now the latest on commodities. Here is Orion Samuelson.
Well, Steve, good morning. And I'm wondering if we can duplicate what happened last Friday. It turned out to be quite a day on Wall Street and in the livestock and grain market because we set new highs for 2016 for the Dow and the S&P 500 on Wall Street. Couple of things I want to mention this morning. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and 34 leaders of agricultural groups and companies in Peru and Chile at the moment on a trade mission hoping to expand the U.S. agricultural export trade to those two countries. And, of course, I'm off to Washington, D.C. in a couple of hours. We'll be there joining a lot of other people in agriculture for the observance of National Agriculture Day. Cochran, if you're up and on time, happy birthday. You all have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right. Thanks, Orion. Safe travels to you today. Payday may have been Friday, but Thursday was a bonus day for thousands of Walmart employees around the world. The retail giant announced in January it was raising wages for employees for $10 an hour, to $10 an hour. And those who already were making $10 an hour or more would see a bump in hourly pay. This move meant to silence critics for years who've been complaining the retail giant hasn't been paying an honest and living wage, but there are still critics. Let's talk about this this morning with WGN and ABC News correspondent Ryan Burrow, who's with us. Ryan, this is a happy day for Walmart workers, is it not?
Yeah, for the employees of Walmart, good news. Their bonuses kicked in actually at the end of February, but they're going to see it on these paychecks here. Walmart investing $2.7 billion in what they call an employee investment and training, giving everyone essentially a little bit of a pay bump. For people who are making below $10 an hour, they'll now be making $10 an hour. For people above $10 an hour, a little bit of a pay bump as well. It's a part of Walmart's way to deflect some of this criticism they've been getting about employees not making enough money. Obviously, we've seen the Fight for 15 rallies that have been going on across the country. People calling for a $15 minimum wage. This doesn't quite get them to that point, but Walmart hopes it helps. There are still critics, though, Steve.
So pay has gone from what to $10? Where were they before $10?
Yeah, you know, at this point, it's really a state-to-state minimum wage, but this is an across-the-board to $10. Now, this is for employees who had worked at Walmart prior to December 31st of 2015. New employees still probably coming in the threshold of about $9 an hour, depending on, you know, what the minimum wage is per state.
And so for a lot of people, this is a significant amount of money.
Should be, yeah, absolutely, especially spread out over a long period of time. They're going to notice it for the first time on these paychecks this week. But as far as the critics go, they say that this simply is not enough. Not only the calls for $15 an hour, but they say that the national average for retailers across the country, the average wage, is about $14 an hour. And this is still well below that for the people who are making $10 an hour. They also say, hey, remember a couple months ago when Walmart closed down some of their stores? You know, that this may be all nice and good for the employees who are still there, but remember, they had to lay off a bunch of workers. And don't forget, too, that, you know, there's always a strong possibility that your wages may go up, but your hours may get cut.
There is always, too, from a management playing the management side here, baby steps. This is baby steps, right?
Sure. Yeah, this is phase two of what's supposed to be a program where they try to energize their employee base a little bit. Wages are part of it. Training is another part of it. And, you know, Walmart wants to show themselves as being very employee friendly, something that they've been criticized for in the past very heavily over the last decade.
There are some that would question motivation of big business. But if you look at some of the evidence in this case, it seems like Walmart's trying to do the right thing.
It does. The question is, will this impact impacts prices. Obviously, Walmart has benefited from being a discount retailer. A lot of people go there because it's just cheaper. People do their grocery shopping there because it's cheaper than their local grocery store. It's, you know, one of the criticisms is when a Walmart moves in, the mom and pops have to move out because it's so cheap. We don't know exactly how this $2.7 billion will be paid out. Is it a rise in prices? They haven't identified that at this point, but probably more of a business model shift as far as the closing and opening of stores.
And then you talked about closings. The last time we were visiting with you, you were telling us about some of these closings, and they hurt.
Yeah, absolutely, especially some of these communities where the mom and pops moved out, and now the Walmarts are moving out. The Walmart Expresses are pretty much done for. Also, some of the less successful Walmarts were cut. This was earlier in the year. At least they were announced they were being cut. So Walmart's trying to, as we've talked about with other retailers, tailor their brand more to the online game, as well as focus in on the areas that really are working in the brick and mortar stores.
Ryan Burrow, who is a correspondent for ABC News, he's also one of the team here at WGN Radio with us about Walmart this morning. That's the opening bell for this Monday. The producer is Mary Sandberg, production help from Ross Cochran. Our engineer, as always, is Ben Cortez. You have a wonderful day. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. The Steve Cochran Show is next. I'm Steve Grzanich. It's 557.